Awesome. I'd like to thank Sonia for inviting me to be part of this panel this morning. So I'm going to jump into this really, really quickly because I want to give you a little bit longer background than most people because this is kind of a new area for a lot of people, even though it's been around a while. There's not a lot of work that's been done in it. So I have no relationships to disclose. With obesity at an all-time high, there's a lot of national initiatives that are being put into place, like the Michelle Obama's and CDC and NIH. They have a lot of PA guidelines that are being put into place, and they're to help us reduce BMI and body weight. But one of the problems, there's a paradox in doing this, in that, for instance, Michelle Obama's efforts are awesome in terms of moving towards physical activity. As an exercise scientist, I'm very passionate about that, but to frame it in such a way that we're saying we don't want any fat kids by 2020 or 2030 starts to change the whole way that we view it. So the paradox of obesity then becomes that our kids, especially our girls, instead of just being healthy, they're just dying to be thin. So we basically sometimes end up doing more harm than we do good. So one of the things that I'm going to talk about today is the harm that has related to substance abuse. I landed in this field in 1997 on accident. As an exercise science, I was hired by the Women's Correctional Center in Nevada to basically just come in and run a health program. And so I spent a lot of time down there, and I would watch these women, and I noticed that a lot of them had eating disorders. They were throwing up in their rooms. Girls were covering for them, because if you're state property, just like cutting yourself, if you're throwing up in your room, they'll send you to the hole. So fortunately, the assistant warden was a female, and I went and talked to her, and I said, you got to let me work with these girls and not send them to the hole, or they're never going to tell us that this is going on. And so long story short, I was able to do some really good research at the time with a professor from UNLV and another one from Auburn University, and we were able to see the prevalence of eating disorders and body image disturbances that was high in this population. We also, did lots of studies looking at the prevalence, and a lot of girls would walk around and show pictures of themselves when they were using very, very thin, and the average weight gain was around 50 to 70 pounds by the time they got to prison. They go to jail, then they get sentenced, and then they go to prison. By the time they got there, the weight was just a big, big issue. So I started doing some studies on that. So I'm going to run through these slides really quick, but I just want you to see how big the issue is. This one talks about just eating disorders and illicit drug use tying bulimia to it. It's the eating disorder that is strongly linked to drug abuse. Even more so than anorexic women, bulimic women use amphetamines, barbiturates, marijuana, tranquilizers, and cocaine. And the heaviest illicit drug is found among those who binge and purge, which was this population for me, and then to compensate for the binge eating. So they go to prison, they can't use the drug anymore, so now they start the eating disorder. And then they cycle back to the drug, and it's just this vicious, vicious cycle. I have an amazing video of a girl that I recorded that goes through the cycle, including over-the-counter herbal, things that she tries. She tried everything just to figure out how to do this safe and legally without ever really solving the real issue. Here's interesting. 50% of individuals with eating disorders also abuse alcohol, as compared to the general population, was only 9%. Flip that around, 35% of people who use alcohol or illicit drugs have eating disorders. So there's a very, very strong link with those two. Body dissatisfaction, women with significant eating pathologies and body dissatisfaction most commonly, and we'll see this a little bit more, use substances with the anorexic effects, all the amphetamines and the cocaine. Here's another one on ecstasy, link between ecstasy and eating disorders, we're seeing a really rise in heroin lately as well, all across the country. Weight and cocaine has been around for a long time. Basically, women, almost 50%, whereas with men it's about 13%. I think women just we're a different beast anyway from men in that the general population, a lot of the studies I did, I used control studies, and the problems were the same, they just weren't as extreme. So it's really interesting to see that, how women view themselves. No offense to any men in the room, but they tend not to have the issues quite as strong in terms of how they view themselves. And I just want to mention this. I'm not going to talk a lot about it. I think one of the panels is going to talk more about adolescents. We are doing work with adolescents as well. The problem is getting younger and younger, and it's becoming a huge issue with substance abuse issues in the schools now, the middle schools and high schools. This is even showing college students. 54% endorse using substance abuse to achieve the thin ideal. At UNLV, I'm actually at UNR, but I'm located in Las Vegas. I forgot to mention that because I'm with the largest extension in Nevada, which is in Las Vegas, so all the work I do is in Clark County. At UNLV, the top three drugs are methamphetamine, Adderall, which is the yuppie version of methamphetamine, a misuse of prescription drugs because it has that effect if you don't have ADHD, and I think OxyContin is the other one. Very popular with college students. Here's talking about young girls more likely to use alcohol, motivated by their ability to or desire to be thin as well. So this is what I'm going to spend the rest of my time on, this one, because this is the work, most of the work that I've done is related to methamphetamine. We're seeing more and more, but been looking a lot at the, you know, that's the most severe of the stimulants. Now, if you look at this, you can see all of these, you don't even have to, if you, the left side are the males and the right side are the females. And then all the different colors are basically related to race, which I'm not going to really look at in this short time. But I did want to look at males versus females. You see the trend? A lot more males using these drugs than a lot more females. Look what happens when you get to methamphetamine. There's no surprise that it's the only drug that more women use than men. Pretty close are sedatives, tranquilizers, and other opiates, but the biggest one is methamphetamine. So why is methamphetamine so big among women, even more so than men? Lots of these studies show that adolescent girls are more likely to use methamphetamine than their male counterparts. In 2008, this is from the SAMHSA, 43% of females accounted for 43% of stimulant-related admissions. And sadly, they also have the highest rate of dropout. They're dropping out at a much higher rate than men are. So why? What is the deal? These are the top three reasons. The top two, especially, weight loss and increased energy. A lot of men use it for increased energy, but women especially use it for weight loss. Five times more likely women are to use methamphetamine for weight loss than men. And also elevation of self-esteem, at least early on in their drug use. That changes quickly. And one of the reasons is amphetamines were used back in the 50s and 60s. Doctors just prescribed it to women for weight loss. It was very very common. The public's unfavorable perception that images everything makes them want to be like what they see in the media, and I'm sure you've heard a lot about that. So amphetamines were prescribed for that. So the work that I've done is related. In extension, we do a lot of work that's evidence-based practice. Like, it's not enough to just say, here's the problem. We really want to work with how to solve the problem. And gender-specific treatment is overlooked in addiction because it's very weight-related. When these girls stand in front of the judge and he says, why did you relapse? She's not going to say, because I got fat and I don't like being fat and I don't like my body because my boyfriend won't take me back and I can't get my job back and so I went back to using. So addressing health-related issues in women in drug treatment is really, really important and very under-recognized by the substance abuse community. In drug treatment, the binging, the purging, the laxative use, all of those legal things becomes the treatment of choice when they can't get the drug, which a lot of them can get in prison, sadly. And then I just wanted to throw this in there. This is just looking at some of the self-treatment that young children, young girls are using in high schools, and even boys. So there's a lot of ways that they're, if I can't use drugs, here's all the things that I can do. But the ultimate underlying issue is that it revolves around weight. And so this is what happens when they go into recovery. Calcium loss, huge with methamphetamine. They lose calcium, so a lot of them are bone deficient. They have a lot of bone disorders, osteoporotic. They have sugar cravings. to replace a lot of their drug use. They're fast food junkies, and a lot of them are lack of knowledge, not like what we find in my other population. I work with low-income moms that are also not very educated, but in this population, they're low-income, low-education, but super high knowledge. They've read everything on the market about how to maintain their weight, so their knowledge is twisted. So we have to debunk all those myths for them. Co-occurring disorders, which I mentioned, metabolic changes. Their metabolism was taken over by the stimulant. Suddenly the stimulant's gone, so now they have none. And it takes a long time in recovery for the metabolism. So we put them, you know, teach them how to eat healthy and be more active. And then a lot of the weight gain, which is related to serotonin changes, dopamine, et cetera, that are coming back in their body. The dopamine's been sort of gone for a while. So this is the program that I had put together. And I worked with Dr. Courtney Warren, who's also a clinical psych professor at UNLV. We partnered together. She specializes in eating pathologies and eating disorders. It's a 12-week program. Most of them are 90 minutes to give them time to process, and these are all the topics that we cover. So we don't ever put them on a diet. Some of them think when they go into it, they call it fat class. They're like, oh, yeah, I have to go to fat class. No, this isn't fat class. This is actually to change your thinking. We're trying to change your thinking about how you perceive, not trying to help you lose weight. We don't even track weight for them necessarily. We track it for ourselves so we can see what's happening to their bodies. Weight changes very little. It's mostly muscle that comes back, bone density that comes back. So they're healthier in the end, but not necessarily lost weight. The average age of our population is 34, and you can see most of them are stimulant users. Almost 60% of them are stimulant users. Very, very common. So ours is even higher than the 43%. If you look at BMI, when we measure their BMI, you can see actually that this is the total. These are stimulant users versus non-stimulant. We don't treat them any different. We put everybody in the program, and we measure data on everybody. But we kind of did some studies to look at the difference between just the stimulant users. And they had mostly all the same issues, but they were higher with weight issues. So you can see whereas everybody, about 65% had overweight or obese, and 75% for the stimulant users. So their weight gain is much faster, which creates even more of a problem. On body fat, the same thing. The total body fat, about 40% of them are over health, the obese categories, so what's healthy, necessarily healthy, and the non-stimulant or the stimulant users were more than half of them. So you can see that the weight gain just triggers for them. Reasons that they use drugs, 52% of them said sometimes, always, usually, or often. So very high percentage of them were using for weight loss. This on the right just shows you some of the common other methods that they also use where had participated in as weight loss measures. And then this is the most important thing that I really want to recognize in the study that we did is we looked at weight-related concerns. Like these are self-reported, obviously. Are you concerned about weight gain while you're in recovery? The total 72% said yes. Stimulants higher, significantly higher. Are you concerned about gaining weight? That gaining weight could trigger a relapse for you. 42% said yes. 48% in the stimulants, and then concerned about using drugs to lose weight after the program is over. Are you concerned about that you might use again? And 26% yes said yes. 31% of the stimulants. So it was significant differences there. And then the pre and post, we did a pre and post to look at those same things. The most significant changes we saw were in the second two. So we actually saw that they were less concerned after 12 weeks of just dealing with talking about body image and where does this come from and why do you feel you have to be 95 pounds. One of the big things we do is ask them, what weight do you think you should be? And they write it down. And then we talk about that. Where do they get that number from? And a lot of them are numbers that when they were using, or some of them when they were in high school. I mean, it's like crazy where they come up with these numbers. But they can write it down that fast. What weight do you think you should be? They know. There's no question about it. And then this is the last thing I want to show you on the results. We've put about 800 or 900 girls through this 12-week program in the last few years. This study was 124 of them at the time we did this, was a couple years ago, had completed the program pre-post. These are all the measures. We used validated tools like the SATAC, if you're familiar with those, the BSQ, the EAT26 that somebody talked about yesterday in one of the programs. They're all eating pathology. Some of them are social, cultural evaluations. And then we also just look at improved knowledge of health, basic eating and activity, and then also whether they improved in their healthy behaviors. And and you can see, I didn't put all the data in here on this one because there wasn't enough time, but I wanted to show you that we found significant difference pre-post in that 12 weeks of just dealing with them. Hopefully down the road we'll be able to start looking at recidivism or dropout rates as well to see if those girls are not as likely to come back. So in conclusion, these are the things that we found, that females in substance abuse treatment were overly concerned about weight and weight gain. It drives their abuse. Validating these weight concerns is critical to a woman. It's not helping them lose weight. That's not the issue. It's validating and understanding that this bothers them, that this is part of dealing, helping them understand weight. Interventions that educate and address health issues associated with these weight concerns are warranted in this population. And programs that address body image and healthy lifestyles may decrease relapse and treatment dropout, especially for women. These are three studies that we published recently. One is looking at the characteristics, the bottom one, Dr. Warren, and then the one at the top is the one that showed that I can be happy to give anybody a copy of that. She actually shows the pre and post on that program. And then the one in the middle was where we actually went and talked to treatment providers to find out, do you know this is a problem? And some of the results that we found that were very interesting. So you can get those, I think maybe even on our website, we probably have those. So some of this data is preliminary. We haven't really published all of it yet. It's kind of a mix-up because I just wanted to really help you recognize the problem and what's going on. If anybody's interested in working in this area, or I hope to put the program online. We don't charge for it. It's cost a lot of money to print it out, so I'm hoping to get it online for people to be able to use. We offer it to counselors to get CEU credit for that. So thank you very much.